Baklushin assured me that the actors had been splendidly chosen, every one to fit his part, that there would even be a curtain, that Filatka's betrothed was to be acted by Sirotkin. "And you will see what he is like in women's clothes," he added, screwing up his eyes and clicking with his tongue. The benevolent lady was to wear a mantle and a dress with a flounce and to carry a parasol in her hand. The benevolent gentleman was to come on in an officer's coat with epaulettes and was to carry a cane in his hand. There was to be a second piece with a highly dramatic ending called Kedril the Glutton. The title aroused my curiosity, but in spite of all my inquiries, I could learn nothing about this piece beforehand. I only learnt that they had not taken the play out of a book, but from a written copy, that they got the play from a retired sergeant living in the town who had probably once taken part in a performance of it himself in some soldier's entertainment. In our remote towns and provinces, there are such plays which no one seems to know anything about, and which have perhaps never been printed, but seem to have appeared by themselves, and so have become an indispensable part of every people's theatre. It would be a very, very good thing if some investigator would make a fresh and more careful study of the people's drama, which really does exist, and is perhaps by no means valueless. I refuse to believe that everything I saw on our prison stage was invented by the convicts themselves. There must be a continuous tradition, established customs and conceptions handed down from generation to generation and consecrated by time. They must be looked for among soldiers, among factory hands, in factory towns, and even among the working classes in some poor obscure little towns. They are preserved, too, in villages and provincial towns among the servants of the richer country gentry. I imagine, indeed, that many old-fashioned plays have been circulated in written copies all over Russia by house serfs. Many of the old-fashioned landowners and Moscow gentlemen had their own dramatic companies made up of serf actors, and these theatres laid the foundations of the national dramatic art, of which there are unmistakable signs. As for Kedril the Glutton, I was able to learn nothing about it beforehand, except that evil spirits appear on the stage and carry Kedril off to hell. But what does the name Kedril mean? Why is it Kedril and not Kirill? Whether it is a Russian story or of foreign origin, I could not find out. It was announced that finally there would be a pantomime to the accompaniment of music. All this, of course, was very interesting. The actors were 15 in number, all smart, spirited fellows. They got together, rehearsed, sometimes behind the prison, held their tongues, and kept things secret. In fact, they meant to surprise us with something extraordinary and unexpected. On working days, the prison was locked up early, as soon as night came on. Christmas week was an exception. They did not lock up till the evening tattoo. This concession was made expressly for the sake of the theatre. Almost every afternoon during Christmas week, they sent a messenger from the prison to the officer of the watch with a humble request to allow the theatricals and leave the wards unlocked a little longer, adding that this had been allowed the day before and there had been no disorder. The officer of the watch reasoned that there really had been no disorder the day before, and if they gave their word that there would be none today, it meant that they would see to that themselves, and that made things safer than anything. Besides, if the theatricals were not allowed, maybe, there's no knowing with a lot of criminals, they might get up some mischief through spite and get the watch into trouble. Another point was that it was tedious to serve on the watch, and here was a play, not simply got up by the soldiers, but by the convicts. And convicts are an interesting lot. It would be amusing to see it. The officers of the watch always had the privilege of looking on. If his superior officer came along, he would ask, "Where is the officer of the watch?" "He is in the prison counting over the convicts and locking the wards." A straightforward answer and a sufficient explanation. And so every evening through the Christmas holidays, the officers of the watch allowed the performance and did not lock the wards till the evening tattoo. The convicts knew beforehand that there would be no hindrance from the officers of the watch, and they had no anxiety on that account. About 7 o'clock, Petrov came to fetch me, and we went to the performance together. Almost all the inmates of our ward went to the performance, except the Old Believer and the Poles. It was only on the very last performance, on the 4th of January, that the Poles made up their minds to be present, and only then after many assurances that it was nice and amusing, and that there was no risk about it. The disdain of the Poles did not irritate the convicts in the very least, and they were welcomed on the 4th of January quite politely. They were even shown into the best places. As for the Circassians, and still more for Isai Fomich, the performance was a real enjoyment. Isai Fomich paid 3 kopecks every time, and on the last performance put 10 kopecks in the plate, and there was a look of bliss on his face. The actors decided to collect from the audience what they were willing to give for the expenses of the theatre and for their own fortifying. Pietrov assured me that I should be put into one of the best seats, however crowded the theatre might be, on the grounds that, being richer than most of them, I should probably subscribe more liberally, and also that I knew more about acting. And so it was. But I will first describe the room and the arrangement of the theatre. The military ward in which our stage was arranged was 15 paces long. From the yard one mounted some steps into the passage leading to the ward. This long ward, as I have mentioned already, was different from the others. The bed platform ran round the walls, so that the middle of the room was free. The half of the room nearest to the steps was given up to the spectators, and the other half, which communicated with another ward, was marked off for the stage. What struck me first of all was the curtain. It stretched for 10 feet across the room. To have a curtain was such a luxury that it was certainly something to marvel at. What is more, it was painted in oil colours with a design of trees, arbours, lakes and stars. It was made of pieces of linen, old and new, such as they were able to collect among the convicts, old leg wrappers and shirts sewn together after a fashion into one large strip, and where the linen fell short, the gap was filled simply with paper which had been begged sheet by sheet from various offices and departments. Our painters, amongst whom A, the Brulov of the prison, was conspicuous, had made it their work to decorate and paint it. The effect was surprising. Such a refinement delighted even the most morose and fastidious of the convicts, who, when it came to the performance, were, without exception, as childish in their admiration as the most enthusiastic and impatient. All were very much pleased, and even boastful in their pleasure. The stage was lit by means of a few tallow candles, which were cut into pieces. In front of the curtain stood 2 benches brought from the kitchen, and in front of the benches were 3 or 4 chairs from the sergeant's room. The chairs were intended for any officers that might come in, the benches for the sergeants and the engineering clerks, foremen and other persons in official positions, though not officers, in case any such looked in on the performance. And in fact, spectators from outside were present at every performance. There were more on some evenings than on others, but at the last performance there was not a vacant seat on the benches. In the back of the room were the convicts themselves, standing, and in spite of the suffocating, steamy heat of the room, wearing their coats or sheepskins, and carrying their caps in their hands out of respect for their visitors. Of course, the space allotted to the convicts was too small, and not only were people literally sitting on others, especially in the back rows, but the beds too were filled up, as well as the spaces to right and left of the curtain, and there were even some ardent spectators who always went round behind the scenes and looked at the performance from the other ward at the back. The crush in the first part of the ward was incredible, and might even be compared to the crush and crowding I had recently seen at the bathhouse. The door into the passage was open, and the passage, where the temperature was 20 below 0, was also thronged with people. Pietrov and I were at once allowed to go to the front, almost up to the benches, where we could see much better than from the back. They looked upon me as to some extent a theatre-goer, a connoisseur who had frequented performances very different from this. They had seen Baklushin consulting me all this time and treating me with respect, so on this occasion I had the honour of a front place. The convicts were no doubt extremely vain and frivolous, but it was all on the surface. The convicts could laugh at me, seeing that I was a poor hand at their work. Almazov could look with contempt upon us gentlemen, and pride himself on knowing how to burn alabaster, but mixed with their persecution and ridicule, there was another element. We had once been gentlemen. We belonged to the same class as their former masters, of whom they could have no pleasant memories. But now, at the theatricals, they made way for me. They recognised that in this I was a better critic, that I had seen and knew more than they. Even those who liked me least were, I know for a fact, anxious now for my approval of their theatricals, and without the slightest servility they let me have the best place. I see that now, recalling my impressions at the time. It seemed to me at the time, I remember, that in their correct estimate of themselves, there was no servility, but a sense of their own dignity. The highest and most striking characteristic of our people is just their sense of justice and their eagerness for it. There is no trace in the common people of the desire to be cock of the walk on all occasions and at all costs, whether they deserve to be or not. One only has to take off the outer superimposed husk and to look at the kernel more closely, more attentively, and without prejudice, and some of us will see things in the people that we should never have expected. There is not much our wise men could teach them. On the contrary, I think it is the wise men who ought to learn from the people.